This TEDx Manhattan coverage has been made possible by the Glenwood Institute. For more information, visit glenwood.org. This is part one of a special feature on Heritage Radio Network in conjunction with TEDx Manhattan. In the spirit of ideas worth spreading, TED has created a program called TEDx. TEDx is a program of local, self-organized events that bring people together to share a TED-like experience. The TEDx Manhattan event is called Changing the Way We Eat, and will be broadcast live as a webcast all day on February 16th. The event will be led by food and farming industry experts, including Anna LaPay, Chef Ann Cooper, Peter Hoffman, and many more. On today's program, Aaron will be joined by Maisie Greenewalt of the Bon Appetit Management Company, who will be speaking at TEDx Manhattan about how humane sausage gets made.
Today we are on the line with Maisie Greenewalt of Bon Appetit Management Company. Maisie, thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here.
So I thought you were going to be one of the featured speakers at TEDx this upcoming February, and we just wanted to get a little sense of what we can expect from your talk. But before we jump into that, I would love to share with our listeners a little bit about Bon Appetit Management Company. If you could give us a little sense of who you guys are and what you do.
Happy to. Bon Appetit Management Company is a food service management company. We provide cafe and catering services to corporations, private colleges, and museums. We've got about 500 cafes in 32 states, and we work really hard to focus on both culinary expertise, made from scratch, delicious food, as well as socially responsible practices, looking at the impacts of our food purchases on the health of our guests and the communities we operate in and the environment in general.
Now, Bon Appetit is pretty revolutionary as far as food service companies go. I mean, you guys were really ahead of the game with regards to sustainability guidelines kind of across the board, from seafood to antibiotic use to cage-free eggs. And the talk you're going to be giving at TEDx Manhattan is on how humane sausage gets made. So I'm curious, how did you come to that as a topic of conversation, and why do you think that's so important to be discussed at this event?
I've been working on issues of humane treatment of farm animals since 2005. It started with a request from one student at American University. His name was David, and he asked us if we could serve cage-free eggs. And that sent me on an odyssey of learning about how cruel animals are treated in today's food system. In 2011, we announced a groundbreaking policy on many animal welfare issues. We had addressed the cage-free egg issue in 2005, but it was in 2011 that we put into place a policy that said that we were going to transition to all pork raised without gestation crates. We were going to eliminate foie gras and crated veal. We were going to have 25% of our purchases certified by a credible, humane certification agency, and really focus on the treatment of animals throughout our supply chain. I think when we did that, or when a company our size makes an announcement like that, that often activists, students in our cafes, and the public in general think that means that we simply start writing a bigger check to a different supplier, that we can just flip a switch and all of a sudden have a more humane meat supply. And in fact, it's much more complicated than that. So how the humane sausage gets made is meant to give people a behind-the-scenes look at how we came to that policy, what our internal struggles were, and what the challenges of making that policy a purchasing reality are.
I want to tuck a little bit further into some of those points, but before we do so, I'm just curious. I mean, that must have been kind of scary for you to put yourself out there like that and, you know, as a representative for the company to say, hey, we're going to draw this line. I mean, was there a lot of, you know, nervousness or tension around taking this role in such a public way?
The scary part is that we've made a commitment to buy a product that doesn't yet exist. So we decided that in order to create the supply, we had to send a strong signal to producers that if they made these changes in practice, they would have a market for them. So it is scary, and that was where a lot of the internal debate came from, and what I'll be talking about in my TEDx Manhattan speech, about how do you set a timeline when you don't know what the costs are going to be? How do you make a commitment to buying a product that is not yet in the marketplace?
Yeah, now, you sit on the board of the Food Alliance, North America's most kind of, well, comprehensive third-party certification for production, processing, and distribution of sustainable food, as I'm reading here from your bio, but also on the board for the Equitable Food Initiative. Where's your kind of background? I mean, obviously you're part of these organizations, but is that where you're kind of getting the substantive background to kind of be thinking really holistically about these issues? Or how are you educating people in your organization? Where do you guys look to for resources or examples to kind of clarify, you know, where the right spot to draw the line in the sand is for you?
Whenever we take on a new issue, we always look for a science-based, credible NGO partner. There's no way that we're going to develop the same level of expertise on antibiotics in the food system as Environmental Defense Fund, who employs PhDs who focus on nothing but that. So we always look for a credible partner, ask a lot of questions, the first question being, what could we do as a company of our size to make meaningful change in the supply stream? What could we ask our suppliers to do that would move the needle on the issues you care about? After gathering all of the information that I can, it's then part of my job to teach our people about the issues, to really educate and inspire our chefs and our managers to make ethical purchasing decisions. We're a very decentralized company, so it's not that my team in purchasing can just change the purchases of the company overnight. Instead, we have to educate about 1,000 chefs and managers on the science, explain to them why we'd like them to make a change, and show them our policy, and set them loose to do whatever it may be. Find a local fisherman to look for a producer of cage-free liquid eggs, to ask about humane certifications. And then we track and report back to them on progress.
And what was the response to that mandate internally? Were people like, thank you for giving us like a new set of, you know, things to do during our already busy work week? And, you know, I mean, I'm sure that there was, you know, kind of reactions across the board, and maybe you could share some of those stories with us.
Our chefs and our managers were really proud, I think, would be the number one reaction. They come to work for Bon Appetit, I hear over and over again, because they can bring their values to work. And I think that when you look at companies who do well by doing good, that a big piece of that is in employee attraction and employee retention. So people who are working for Bon Appetit Management Company have already self-selected to be excited about these issues and to be willing to do the extra work that comes from them. It is absolutely more work to run a Bon Appetit kitchen than to run the kitchen of a chain restaurant with set suppliers and a set menu and very strict guidelines. Creativity and freedom take work, but our people are up to that challenge and excited by it. There's sometimes a little bit of confusion, I'll be honest, because these issues are so complicated and there are so many different nuances. The number of certifications out there, for example, when you talk about animal welfare, and we accept 4 of them. We accept Food Alliance, as you mentioned, Humane Farm Animal Care, Animal Welfare Approved, and Global Animal Partnership. But there are several other certifications that we just don't think are high bar enough when it comes to their animal welfare standards. And those people, representatives from those organizations, will sometimes contact our chefs directly and try to pitch that their certification should be followed. And it's important for my team to have armed our people with the right response. So overall, our people's reaction, very, very positive. But I will say, sometimes a little confusion, and we have to retrench and re-educate.
Yeah, I mean, I think, to me, it's just hard to unpack, you know, sitting down and putting together such a comprehensive program for such a large organization. I mean, what was the kind of low-hanging fruit in the initial discussion and during some of the kind of early transition period? What were some things that you were like, wow, that was actually not too difficult to accomplish?
Definitely the low-hanging fruit was eliminating foie gras and crated veal. We weren't buying a lot of either, so that was very easy to do. And we're talking a couple $1,000s worth of purchases, not hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of purchases. The tougher pieces are the gestation crate-free pork and the cage-free liquid eggs.
And have you been surprised by developments in those areas? Like, are you running into hurdles that you weren't anticipating? Or do you feel like, yep, it's pretty much the lay of the land that we expected, and we just kind of keep following our plan and trusting that if we kind of keep going towards it, that you'll get there?
One piece that we didn't expect that I still don't know how it's going to play out is that after we made our announcement about gestation crates, there have been over 30 other companies that have made similar announcements. Ours has the shortest time frame. Ours is 3 years, and some others are up more like 10, 15 years. And on the one hand, that's very positive because we want to make change and we want to eliminate gestation crates from the entire supply chain. On the challenging side, we're going to be competing for that product. So our major supplier, for example, has eliminated gestation crates from 38% of their supply chain. And now it's not just Bon Appetit that wants that 38%. It's 30 other companies that also want that 38%.
And I'm curious, like, how you're engaging, you know, with your suppliers, with the agriculture community. I mean, you essentially set out this mandate with a timeline, and I'm assuming, you know, kind of a promise to buy into this market. That three-year timeline, I mean, does that come from, you know, advice of people working in that industry, or like, this is the transition period these kind of producers of the scale will be able to adapt to? And where does kind of cost work into the change in growing practices?
Well, now you're getting at exactly the type of story that I'm going to tell in my TEDx Manhattan talk.
Oh, I'm jumping
ahead. I'll give you this as an example. You just laid out a very logical framework for how we could have gotten to the 3 years. How we actually got to it is I said, I think we can do this in 5 years. Our CEO said, I don't care what anybody thinks. I don't care what the supply is. I want to do it now. I want to do it next year. I said, I don't think we can do it next year. There's no supply. We went back and forth, like, name that tune, and we settled on 3 years.
And what's the response been?
The response has been very positive from the advocates and very cautionary from the producers. And that's the exact type of thing that I want to be able to share with the public, because I'm not sure that the public knows that corporations are made up of people who sometimes do things based on an educated guess, a wing, and a prayer. And to really make change and to be out there first, you've got to be willing to take those risks. And this is how it went down within Bon Appetit.
Wow, I can't say enough how much I appreciate the transparency with which you're able to share some of this information. Because I do think one of the things I often run up against when dealing with an organization of your size is there's a real kind of paranoia and a real unwillingness to, I think, trust the public to engage in, understand, or attempt to understand the complexities of some of these decisions and kind of finding a safe space between the PR spin and telling a real story that arms consumers with tools to make choices that reflect their values. I think that's really challenging.
It is, but I think it's really important for Bon Appetit selfishly, in that I strongly believe the more people understand about who we are, what we do, how much passion and how much care we put into our initiatives, the more they'll appreciate them. And I believe it's important for the supply chain in general, because I think the more advocates understand how companies like ours work, the better they can lobby other companies to make similar changes.
Massey, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and giving us a little bit of teaser to your upcoming talk that will be happening February the 16th. And folks can stream that live by visiting www.livestream.com/TEDx to hear from Massey and a whole slew of other kind of wonderful participants. We'll be talking with a number of them over the next couple of weeks. So definitely stay tuned and then tune in on February the 16th.
Be sure to tune in for part 2 and 3 of our special TEDx Manhattan coverage, as we will be chatting with Gary Hirschberg, chairman of Stonyfield Farm, and Steve Wing, associate professor of epidemiology at the University of North Carolina. You can find all of our coverage on the HRN events and specials page at heritageradionetwork.org. Thanks for listening.